Let's pray together. Jesus, we're glad for the music that glorifies you and how we long for our lives to carry that kind of melody, that our lives in word and deed would rise to give you glory. This morning, Lord, I'm asking that you might be gracious to us, and that as we open up your word, that you would speak to your people. I long to meet with you today, and I know that that's why these friends are gathered this morning. Would you be gracious and bestow by your Spirit grace to us that we might see Jesus in fresh and attractive ways, that our hearts might really be renewed in being captured again and again to Him. I'm asking that you would draw those who know Him to a greater dependence, a greater trust, a greater joy, a greater satisfaction in Him. And I'm asking this morning that if it would please you that you would draw those who don't yet know Him to come to find Him to be trustworthy and amazing. Lord, it really is needed, necessary, right and proper for us to meet with and hear from you this morning. So, place a watch over my mouth and direct me by your Spirit and in accordance with your word, that you would receive honor and glory from what is said, and that the saints would be encouraged, and that Christ would be lifted up, and that we would leave knowing you a bit better and trusting you more. This would be for our good, and this would be for the spread of your fame, and that is what I pray. Amen. All of you have photo albums, I know. I've been to homes of many of you, and there's this interesting thing about a photo album where you put the photos together, who's ever arranging the photo album, they put the photos together in a particular way, so that as you start to look through the photo album, as you turn pages, each page you turn adds to the story. And as you're turning the pages, watching the story unfold, you get a sense of what's going on by the way that you watch the pictures, the photos. These photos from a trip that I took to Thailand. As I put them in the album, as you turn the pages, hopefully there's a story that unfolds. As you're doing that, though, sometimes there's a particular photo that might catch your attention, something that you need to come back to, something you need to pay close attention to in order to make sure that you understand what is being said in that photo, how does that fit with the flow of the story. I want to use that idea, this idea of a photo album and coming back and looking at photos, for the way that we think about the Gospel of Mark. We've been in this journey through the Gospel of Mark, and Mark, in a sense, has laid out for us a photo album. He has gathered, under the inspiration of the Spirit, a series of photos or snapshots about Jesus, what Jesus says and what he does. And Mark has ordered them and put them together in a particular way. And the way that Mark puts those photos together, under the inspiration of the Spirit, is part of how he tells his story. And so we need to pay attention to the flow, the momentum, the movement that takes us along in the Gospel of Mark. And that's what we've been doing. We've been, in a sense, looking over Mark's shoulder and watching as he opens his photo album for us. And the reason why we're doing this is it's so very important. We need to understand what Mark has to tell us about Jesus. Because knowing Jesus is critical. If you know this Jesus, if you have relationship with this Jesus, you have life. If you don't know this Jesus, you don't have relationship with this Jesus. You have existence, but you don't really have life. To have relationship with the real Jesus that Mark presents to us is to have real life. To miss him is to miss life. So we've been flipping through Mark's photo album. And last week, Charlie took us through a couple of the photos that helped us understand the momentum of the story and the thing that Mark was telling us. He helped us get caught up in the flow of the account and understand what Mark was picturing for us. You may remember, last week, it starts with a crowd. Jesus gets off the boat after having crossed the sea, and he's met by a crowd. The crowd is there because everywhere that Jesus goes, there's a crowd. Because he's been teaching and healing and wonderful and amazing things have been going on. And as Jesus is there, a man, a leader of the synagogue, comes. His name is Jairus, and comes to Jesus and says, "You've got to come and help me because my daughter, she's at the very point of death." And so Jesus very willingly goes with Jairus, and they head on their way, the crowd following. And as they go through the crowd, a woman is working her way through the crowd. As Jesus and Jairus are heading towards Jairus' house, this crowd following, a woman is working her way through, and she reaches out and grabs hold of Jesus' garment, and when she does, her affliction is dealt with, and she is healed. And if you remember, the story doesn't end there, because Jesus is on his way to Jairus' house. He stops and talks with the woman all the while, Jairus waiting, hoping, anticipating, come on, my daughter is at the point of death. And then he gets a word from a servant from his house. And I don't need to bother the teacher any longer because your daughter has died. Well, Jesus speaks a word to Jairus, finishes up with the woman, and they head on their way to Jairus' house. And Jesus' grace extends way past what Jairus anticipated. And Jesus raises his little daughter from the dead. And that whole story hangs together from the crowd to the resurrection of the little girl. And Charlie walked us through that and helped us understand the momentum of that story and why Mark puts the pieces together the way that he did. And I was reflecting this week on some of the things that Charlie said. He reminded us that Jesus does not always operate according to our schedule. I know about you, but that's a really good word to hear. You know, I have ways and times when and how I think Jesus should act. And just watching the story unfold, as Charlie helped us see it last week, it's important to remember that Jesus doesn't operate according to our schedule. And then he also helped us see, helped me remember, that when we come to Jesus with our needs, sometimes he's going to invite us to give more than we anticipated. He may draw us in a little farther than we thought. And in exchange, he will often give us more than we expected. And we see that pictured in that story also. And the last thing that Charlie drove home, which, my goodness, so necessary to see this and understand this, when things seem out of control, it may simply be that something is going on that we don't see. When it seems like things are out of control, maybe it's because Jesus is doing something that we just don't see. And all of that is part of how Mark is telling us the story. That is part of what Mark wants us to see as he lays out chapter 5 for us. That's really what is woven into that account. Kind of like the photo album. The photos are laid out there. That's where Mark is going. But as I was reflecting on that and looking back over, in a sense, those pages in the photo album, there's something about one of the photos that catches my attention. And this morning, what I want to do is come back and look at one of the photos in that series, see a little bit about, well, let me put it this way. When you're reading any of the Gospels, and Mark does this a lot, Mark will oftentimes tell us almost like summary statements, and Jesus healed people, or Jesus touched that person. And Mark is offering us a very succinct, simple statement about Jesus' ability to heal or his compassion or his care. But there are some times when Mark pauses long and gives us lots of detail. And when he does that, it's really important to ask the question, well, why is Mark spending so much time here? Why is he giving so much attention to this? In a sense, you can begin to get a feel for the emphasis of Mark's gospel by the kind of attention to detail Mark gives. And there is something in this account that we looked at last week where Mark spends a great deal of his attention. It fits in the flow. It's part of the account. But in a sense, Mark's attention to the detail calls my attention back. And I have to pay attention to one little snapshot out of the series of photos. Let's go back then to Mark chapter 5, in the middle of this sequence that Charlie shared with us last week. I want to pick up and look a little closer at the woman that Jesus meets. Why bother to look closer at the woman? Well, Mark spends more time telling us about her affliction and her healing than anybody else in the Gospel of Mark who gets healed. He has more time and attention to this woman's exchange with Jesus than anybody else whom Jesus heals. That causes me to go, whoa, maybe there's something here to pay attention to. It's not that it is the whole thing Charlie shared with us, talked with us about the flow of the account. But there is something here in the details of this story that I think warrants our attention. So I want to come back and take a close look at that snapshot in the series, Mark chapter 5. I'm going to start in verse 24. And Jesus, he went with him, Jairus. And Jesus went with Jairus. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better but rather grew worse, she heard the reports about Jesus. And she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she kept saying to herself, if I even just touch his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, now who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, don't you see the crowd pressing around you? Yet you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Lots of details here. More attention to this account of healing than any other one in Mark. And so I want to ask what's going on here. And I started to notice that in the flow of the story Mark has been talking about, there's a mention of faith. Back in chapter 4, you may remember a couple weeks ago, we were with the disciples as they were crossing the Sea of Galilee in the midst of a storm. It's a really good thing to do when you're in the midst of a storm, to call out to Jesus. That's what they did. They were in the midst of a terrible storm. Jesus is asleep in the stern, and they go and wake him up in anticipation he might be able to do something. And right there in that moment, chapter 4, verse 40, Jesus turns to the disciples after he's calmed the storm, and he says, guys, why are you afraid? How come you don't have any faith? He questions their faith. Now in chapter 5, verse 36, when Jairus hears that his daughter has died, don't trouble the teacher any longer. Jesus turns to Jairus and says, Jairus, now, don't start being afraid. Only keep on believing. The disciples, Jesus questions whether they're still believing. Jairus, Jesus encourages him to not stop believing. But the woman, did you hear what Jesus said to the woman? He says, woman, you're afraid. Wow. Faith saved you. In the midst of the flow of this story, we get the disciples who get questioned about their faith, and Jairus who gets encouraged to stay in his faith, but the woman seems to have gotten it. That causes me to pause and go, what's going on with this woman? She seems to have something that the disciples missed and that Jairus missed. She seems to have got it. Somehow she understands faith. You see, the situation is pretty much the same. The disciples, they're in the boat. They have a great need. They're about to drown. That's a pretty big need. Pretty serious. Jairus, he's got a big need. His daughter is at the point of death. Nothing to do with her. Doesn't know what to do with her. The woman, she's been sick. Mark says that she's been sick for 12 years. She was sick and has only gotten worse. Her sickness was pretty bad when it started. I can't imagine what it's been like after 12 years of spending everything she has at the hands of many doctors and not getting any better, but only getting worse. You have three groups of people, the disciples, who have a great need. Jairus, who has a great need. The woman, who has a great need. They all know something about Jesus. The disciples anticipate, believe, expect that Jesus can do something about the storm, otherwise they wouldn't have woken him. Jairus assumes, knows, believes, thinks that Jesus can do something about his daughter, because otherwise he wouldn't have come to Jesus. The woman, we're told she heard something about Jesus and believes that if he comes, she just lays hands on him. Then in fact, so we got three desperately needy people. We got three desperately needy people who think Jesus can do something about them and their need. We got three desperately needy people who think Jesus can do something about the need, and they all come to Jesus. And yet, the disciples, there's a problem with their faith. And Jairus, there's a need to encourage his faith, but the woman seems to got it. What's with that? That causes me to go, well, Mark, what's going on here? They all share so much common, but there's something different about her. I'm not saying that the disciples or Jairus were wrong. I think they were right in bringing their need to Jesus. But there's something about the woman and her exchange that exceeds what they have. There's something about the woman and her experience that exceeds what they experienced. And I've been struggling with all week how to get my arms around this, how to understand what Mark is telling us. And I'm going to suggest it this way, and this is what I want to unpack. I think that she had more than a response from Jesus, but she entered into a relationship. I think that it was, she went past the moment of need into the momentum of a relationship. And that's what made her faith different. Now, before you accuse me of reading too much into the text, let me point out a few things that lead me to think that there's something going on here. First, as you notice, it says that she works her way through the crowd, and she reaches out and touches his garment, and immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. It was only after she was healed, and she knew it, and she was healed, and Jesus knew it, that Jesus then invites her to come forward. Apparently, there's something beyond the meeting of her need that Jesus is after. That is, it is after she's been healed and she knows it, after she's been healed and Jesus knows it, that he calls to her. Now, it's important to notice, I think it's important to notice, that Mark, when it says that Jesus turned around to ask, "Who touched me?" he uses feminine nouns and pronouns. I think Jesus knew who the woman was. I think of it. I don't think that the healing happened accidentally. I don't think Jesus was unaware of what had happened. I think of it that way because I remember how Jesus dealt with the man with the withered hand in the synagogue. You may remember a few weeks ago we spent some time there in the synagogue with Jesus, and there was a man with a withered hand, and Jesus invited the man forward, and then after the man came forward, Jesus simply told the man, "Stretch forth your hand." If you remember, Jesus didn't speak a word of healing. Jesus didn't touch the guy. Jesus didn't say, "Be healed." He simply told the man, "Stretch forth your hand." And it says that as he stretched that out, it was made whole. Now, no one in that group thought, "Oh, that happened accidentally." Jesus didn't know what was going on there. He was surprised by the fact that the man was healed. No, in fact, that's in fact intentionally how Jesus intended to heal the man. Although we don't get an overt statement that Jesus willed it, did it, it's very clear when you read that account, well, Jesus obviously did that. And I think the same thing is going on here. I think Jesus is aware of the crowd that's around him. I think Jesus is aware of the woman and her faith. And I think Jesus willed for her to be well. I don't think it happened accidentally. I don't think Jesus leaked healing where he went. I think it was intentional and purposeful. Others were pressing in. He knew she was pressing in with faith. And like the man with the withered hand, he willed her healing, just like he willed his healing. The man with the withered hand stretched out his hand, and he was healed. This woman stretches out her hand, she's healed. And yet, after she knows she's healed, after her need is met, Jesus, "Come on forward. There's more. There's something else." And she does. So he's inviting something else other than the meeting of the need. And then did you notice, this staggers me. Chapter 5, verse 34, he says to her, "Daughter." Now you go, big deal, he calls her daughter. You know what? That is the only person in the New Testament that Jesus addresses that way. That's pretty significant. Because that's not just a random term. That's a familial term. That's a relational term. That's an endearing term. He calls her daughter. Not woman. Not hey you. Doesn't call her by name. He calls her daughter. That's I think that's significant. Something's going on there. Something is happening in the dynamic of the exchange that he has with the woman that makes it appropriate for him to speak to her as daughter. And it is only after their exchange. That is only after Jesus and the woman share time together. Only after. And remember, Mark says that she had suffered for 12 years with this terrible disease. It hadn't made her any better when she'd gone to the doctor. She only got worse. She spent everything she had. And then Mark says she told him the whole truth. It was only after that great exchange, that lengthy discussion, that Jesus says, "Daughter, your faith," he says, "has saved you." Most translations render it, "made you well." But the word there is to be saved, to be whole, to be restored. He says, "Woman, your faith has made you whole. Now you can go in peace." And literally, remain healed. Certainly healing is part of what she experienced, but there's something else going on here. It is only after this exchange that seems to be way past the response to her basic need. I've been thinking, as I've been trying to ask the Spirit, "Tell me, Spirit, why did you inspire Mark to put these words down? Why record this for us?" I've been thinking about what it would have been like for the woman to press through the crowd. Charlie touched on this last week a little bit. Let me remind you. Her affliction, this flow of blood, would have made her unclean. What that meant was that she shouldn't be on public. She shouldn't be out with people. In fact, it's not necessarily the case, but it's suggestive that there's no mention of her family or her husband in this account. It's likely if she had had a flow of blood for 12 years, she would have been unclean and her husband would have just divorced her. You're not getting better. I'm sorry, because he couldn't even sit where she sat in their house because she was unclean. So for 12 years, she's been an outcast. For 12 years, she cannot go to synagogue. She cannot hang out with friends and family. She has lived, although she doesn't have leprosy, she gets to live like a leper in her own home. And she has spent everything that she has, and she has not gotten any better. She is just in a terrible condition. And she hears about Jesus. Do you understand how staggeringly challenging it would have been for her to get out in public and find Jesus and track him down and work her way through the crowd? It would have been a huge challenge. Oh my goodness, she's not supposed to be in contact with other people. And here she's in the midst of the crowd pushing through people. Excuse me, I just want to get up close. As long as no one recognizes her. Oh, you're my neighbor, right? Who's not supposed to be out in public. That would have been, why does she go to the great lengths to put herself at such risk?
Really bad condition.
Jesus can do something about it. I think she weighs the risk and says, I'm going. Because Jesus can do something about this. But then think with me. She has now been healed. I got what I came for. What do you think she would do now? She leaves. What else? I came to be healed. Now I'm healed. She heads on her way and she's leaving. And Jesus says, no, someone touched me. I need you to come forward. What do you think she's thinking? Oh, no. I got what I came for. I don't want any trouble. No embarrassment. I don't want the difficulty. No, I don't want people to... I shouldn't have been in the crowd, but not... Can't you imagine all this stuff going through her head and heart? She was thinking... The potential for Jesus to heal me is worth the risk of exposure. What does she have to be now thinking to come and make herself known to everybody and to tell her whole story? Because she's already healed. I think she's thinking the risk of exposure is overweighed by the potential to be healed. The risk of exposure is overwhelmed by the potential to get to know him. Come on, talk with me. That's what he's inviting. Come talk with me. You see, biblically, when you start to think about faith, faith is not merely a confidence that a certain kind of thing is going to happen. In the New Testament, in the English language, in the translations, we sometimes see the word faith, sometimes the word believe. It's one Greek word. It means to rely on, to depend on, to have confidence in, to rest in, to trust in. And as I'm listening to her story and watching Mark tell it to us, I think that she moves past believing that my need will be met to believing that I need to meet this guy. I think she moves from believing for something to believing in someone. I think she moves from a fundamental what question, what's going to happen, to a fundamental who question. Who is this guy? What is she thinking? I think she initially thinks, I need my need met. And then I think she's thinking, I need to meet him. And I think she makes that move. And that's the only way that I can explain why she came back, why she didn't just head on her way to her home. There was something compelling and attractive, and I think she's coming to risk trusting him. It's like what happens with your mechanic. My car is in the shop right now. On good advice, I took my car to a mechanic. It was leaking water. I hear cars aren't supposed to do that. I'm not terribly mechanically inclined. When I look under the car and there's a large puddle of water and it's not raining, I conclude something's wrong. So I take it to a mechanic, someone I've not had my car worked on before, but someone said, reliable, good guy. So I left my car there and I called him later on in the day. So what's it look like? And he starts to run down a litany of things that need to, and I'm like, what? You're going to do what? And it's going to cost what? And I'm struggling with trusting him. But where I'm struggling with trusting him is trusting him to do that, right? Will I trust him to do that? Now, there's a difference. There's a difference when you have a long-standing relationship with a mechanic that you've had work on your car over periods and periods and periods of time. Because then when you take your car to the mechanic, where you've learned not just to trust him to do that, but you trust him, you drive your car in there and he goes, it needs a whatchamadollar. Good, put one in, whatever it is. Because I now have come to trust you. Do you remember, you know what I'm saying? The difference. It's the difference when you go to the doctor and the doctor says, we need to do exploratory surgery. And you're like, exploratory surgery? You've got to do exploratory surgery. And you start running through your mind, who is this guy that's telling me we have to go to exploratory surgery? Do I really, you're wrestling with, do I trust him, right? The doctor you're most comfortable with is the one where you've moved past the issue of, do I trust him with this need? The mechanic that you're comfortable with is the one that you move past. Do I trust him with this need to, do I trust him? The woman comes initially with a need. I think, I believe, I'm going to trust Jesus to meet this need. He does, and then he calls to her for more, and she gives in. She shares 12 years of her story with him. She lays it bare before him and the crowd. Why? I think she's coming to trust him. So it is with the disciples in the boat. The disciples are in the boat and the storm has come. And they wake Jesus because they think he can do something about their need. And what does Jesus say to them? He says, why are you afraid? Don't have any faith. I don't think he's saying, why are you afraid?
Don't you know who I am?
I don't think it's an identity issue. I think he says, why are you afraid? Can't you trust me here in this place? Can't you trust me? When Jairus gets the word that his daughter is no longer sick but now dead, Jesus says, don't be afraid, Jairus, but keep on believing. I don't think he's telling Jairus, try really, 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 really hard to feel good about what's going to happen. I think he's telling Jairus, Jairus, rest in me. Depend on me. Rely on me. Trust me. It's moving from the need to the person. It's true. It's true. Jesus is delighted to meet our needs. You ought to be bringing your needs to him. But she goes past getting what she wants from Jesus to taking the risk of relating to him and disclosing all to him. Sometimes I think about the way that I pray. Sometimes I bring my needs before Jesus and here's the thing I want Jesus to deal with. And so that's the thing I talk with him about. Jesus, please fix this. Do this. This is the need. And because he's gracious and wise and kind and powerful, he often does those very kinds of things. You've experienced that where he's met a need. And it just dawned on me this week that below that need, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in my soul. Worries and concerns and stuff that has led up to that point of need. And I come to Jesus and it's a kind of bump and run relationship. I bump up against him, I say, this is what I need, and he does that and I run off. I'm good, I got what I needed. But there's all this going on in my soul that I don't talk with him about that doesn't ever come to the surface. And I wonder, how come this relationship with Jesus feels so shallow, so less than real? Jesus is speaking to a bunch of religious people. Think about people like you and me. And they were good students of the Scriptures. And Jesus said that you search the Scriptures because you think that in them you have life. Speaking to these religious people, he said, you pursue the Scriptures because you think that there's clues and keys to life and how to get things happen for you. That's how I approach Jesus often. Jesus says, there are things you're going to do for me. I see them here in the Scriptures and I try to work the Scriptures to make my life work better. And Jesus, speaking to these religious people, says, you search the Scriptures because you think that in them you have life, but what you fail to understand is that they speak about me. And you then don't come to me in order to have life. That's where she's going. She comes initially with a need, and the need gets met, and then Jesus goes, more. And she goes, okay. And she comes and experiences more with him. She initially was looking for a one-way transaction, much like I do. Don't mess with my life, Jesus. Just fix my need. Rooted in who Jesus was and what he did. Meet my immediate need. But then Jesus invites her. Wait, stop. Don't go away. There's more. Open your life to me. And she does. She begins trusting him. She moves past the one-way meet-the-need approach to a two-way exchange that brings her into a more intimate relationship with Jesus himself. And he calls her daughter. If you have time, go back and read Mark chapter 3, where Jesus talks about who's in his family. Why would he use family to talk about her? Because she's now in his family. How did she get there? Jesus said, those who do the will of the Father, they're in my family. She's now part of his family. Jesus' gracious miracle opens the door for relationship. And rather than just getting the need met and running off, she steps in through the door and now is into this vital and real and growing moment with Jesus. It's not about the moment of need. It's the momentum that begins to follow, the momentum of this relationship. And she says, he says to her, your faith has saved you. Do you realize that had she left at that time and not responded, not come back to him, she would have still been healed. But she wouldn't have been whole. She came to have her need met, and her need was met. She would have left with her need met. She's healed. But now that she has this exchange with Jesus, now that she pours out her heart, tells him her whole story there in that exchange, Jesus, now, daughter, your faith has saved you, restored you, brought wholeness. And then he says, now you can go in peace. She could have gone before healed. I don't think she would have had peace. There's more to it than the meeting of the need. It's not wrong to come to Jesus with the need. The disciples did. Jairus did. The woman initially did. But what makes her faith great is that she goes farther and she begins to see that faith is not merely trusting Jesus to do something. It is coming to trust him, to rely on him, to depend on him, to rest in him, to do life with him. So I'm thinking, so I will get my arms around this because I don't tend to live here very much. Just three thoughts in closing. Yes, bring your needs to Jesus. All the time. Every time. Bring your needs to Jesus. Jesus delights in meeting needs. That's what we see. Every page of the Gospel of Mark, Jesus is meeting needs. One of Jesus' favorite things to say is, what can I do for you? Jesus delights to meet needs. But in bringing your needs to Jesus, see him. Would you look at him? Would you get to know him? Would you be attentive to him? Don't just bump and run. Don't just bring the need and get the need met. It's more than that. And so, second thing, so when Jesus invites you to stay and talk, do that. You come with your need. You make your need known. Jesus is there. He wants to hear the whole story. He wants all that's going on in your heart. This week, that has been me. I realize I talked to him about the need, hoping that he'll meet the need, and there's so much other stuff going on in my soul. Jesus invites the dialogue. So pray. Pray aloud. Don't just pray in your head. I don't know about you, but praying in my head, I get really distracted. Or I sleep, fall asleep. So pray aloud. Tell him the whole story. Here's the need, and it's all attached to all of this stuff, this crud in your soul, and it's stuff that you don't understand, and it's stuff that troubles you, and we talk to him about the need. Do something about this person, this issue, but it's really attached to all of this. And Jesus wants to, he wants to deal that need, he wants to address that need, but he also wants to deal with you as a whole person. He wants to bring wholeness and health to your whole person. So, move past seeing Jesus as a heavenly need-meeting dispensing machine and get to know him as family. Relate to him fully. I know that leaves me in a bit of tension in terms of, well, what does that look like? I don't know how to explain it. But don't not talk with him about the whole truth. And then the third thing, listen for him to speak. Listen for him to speak in your heart, in your mind, through his word, by the Spirit. He intends to speak. He wants to speak. Listen to him speak. Listen to what he says to this person. Daughter, aspirational. Close friend, son, child, mine, your faith. You're depending on me. You're relying on me. You're trusting me. You're granting this freedom to have life with me has resulted in your being saved, made whole, enriched. Daughter, your faith has saved you. Faith isn't the power. Faith is the conduit. Jesus is the power. But Jesus says, you're depending on me, you're relying on me, you're opening up yourself to me has resulted in your being made whole and well. Not just your physical healing. The salvation has come to your soul. Now. Now you can go in peace. You want to know why you don't have peace? John reasons. Here's one. You only brought your need to him. You didn't tell him the whole truth. You only bumped and ran. Got your need met. Done. On my way. Jesus goes, no. Come close. Tell me all of it. Trust me with all of it. And then you start to hear words like, child, trusting me with all of it. This results in your wholeness. This results in your salvation. This results in peace. It's a snapshot. There's a lot there.
Don't miss it. Let's pray.
Jesus, won't you please impress us again and capture us again and draw us again to how trustworthy and amazing and wonderful and gracious and kind and wise and loving and tender you are. Do not let us leave with only having certain needs met. Help us to stand entirely open before you, risking 12 years or 15 years or 30 years or a few days of grief and struggle and sorrow and sadness and trouble and heartache, risking it all with you, trusting you with all of it, so that just not the surface things, but all that we are might be brought into the circle of your grace. And there we might hear a tender word spoken. Child, you're trusting me as you go into salvation. Trusting me, I can bring wholeness. Trusting me, child, you can.